All right, Proverbs chapter 16. We're walking through the book of Proverbs and how I trust that you're learning from it. We're in the first stage of the book of Proverbs, learning about what the book of Proverbs has to say about our emotions. And there are 21 emotions found. I'm not going to preach on all 21. I'm going to preach on there's 10 of them that are negative and 7 that are positive and three or four of those are consequential. In other words, because this happened, this emotion took place. So I'm going to do 3 of each. And so I've preached on anger, and we saw what the importance of controlling our anger. We've seen the importance of a soft answer turns away wrath, and we understood that we do not. If we do not conquer anger, it will disgrace us. Our anger really proves where our heart is. And with the patient spirit, there is a groundswell of wisdom. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. Then I dealt with envy last Wednesday night, and we learned that envy drives us to the wrong position every time. Envy destroys relationships. Envy has the power to disrupt the ranks of leadership in business, leadership in government, leadership in the church. Envy is an enemy, certainly, that we have. It leads to strife, and we prove that. I was amazed at the number of verses that envy produced strife. I brought those out last week. It really was a shock to me. I never made that connection until I sat down and studied that out. And then envy is so strong that it has the power to discourage the best of Christians, even mature Christians, because it's an unseen enemy, often unfelt, until we unleash it, and then it's real trouble. Envy discredits our testimony. It hurts us. We cannot hide envy. And because we do not hide envy, we can't be a hypocrite with it. So others pick up on it and see that we are struggling. And in this message tonight, we're going to deal with a haughty spirit. Now, I see a haughty spirit in many different venues down through my ministry. I see it in politics. I saw it at the State House as a state rep unleashed personal vindictive, personal garbage on Eric one day. And I shouldn't have been surprised. I try not to be surprised at things like that, but, I was so surprised that I felt led to give a testimony and that, to testify in that committee. And, after I finished testifying, I did in a very kind way. Say, you know, I'm a little bit disappointed that we spend our time electing as officials and they can't have an intelligent disagreement without becoming personal and vindictive. And the person who had introduced the bill got up after me and apologized for the state rep that launched out at Eric. Which I appreciated because we were contesting his bill, which I appreciated. But I saw a haughty spirit in a lady that day that was quite revealing. I see haughty spirits in sports, on the football field, on the baseball diamond, on the basketball court. Unfortunately, because we have our young men and ladies in love with sports, they learn to mimic that haughty spirit. And because they see professionals do it. I see haughty spirits now that NASCAR has started. You can see haughty spirits among the NASCAR drivers, especially when they get mad at each other. And they become very hostile in their haughty spirit. I've seen it in the best of Christians. Carnality has a way of twisting us up like a pretzel spiritually. And before we realize it, we're being haughty in our response, quick. It has teeth in it. We're doing it on purpose. And we're haughty about it. What does it mean to have a haughty spirit? We'll examine that this evening in the message. I thought about this. our lives, the pilgrimage we're on from heaven, from earth to heaven, God has one great goal in mind for us as believers. And that great goal is to develop our character so we will not be haughty in our spirit or envious or angry, or others that are in this book, jealousy, hatred, malice. All of these words are found in the book of Proverbs. And he does that by replacing our haughty spirit or our envy with a patient spirit. And patience is more than a virtue. It must be a discipline. Because you can even react to someone's haughty spirit in a wrong way. Someone is haughty, and you know they are, but it kind of gets your goat. You know what that phrase is? How many of you know that? Get your goat? Okay. That might be South Georgia lingo. Someone gets your goat, and before you know it, you're responding wrong. And now you've got not the problem with their haughty spirit, but now you've responded wrong, and now there's two problems and not one. I love solving one problem. I don't like making a second problem. I used to be good at making second problems, and I realized, hey, why am I doing this? I'm making things hard on myself. So I have learned over the years that even though it's contrary to my carnal nature, to be quiet or ask questions and not make statements, because it helps us keep from being out of control and saying things that we'll have to apologize for later. There are three verses in the book of Proverbs that uses the English phrase haughty spirit. And we're just going to examine those three and a few others. I'm going to bring in a few examples from other passages of Scripture. But the first one is found in chapter 16, verse 18. You're there. Let's look at it there. And it's the very first point that I want us to look at. And that is, a haughty spirit is directly tied to our pride. It's directly tied to our pride. Let's see it there in verse 18. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. So obviously, it's easy to extract from that verse that a haughty spirit and pride are linked together. They are tied together, connected together. So what does this word haughty mean? It simply means to be arrogant, to be proud, to be elated about yourself or your position. So a haughty spirit comes out of who we are, what we do, how we do it. That's why race car drivers and athletes and politicians, and even you and I as normal everyday Christians, we struggle. We can develop a haughty spirit. We can become arrogant out of our own pride. It's connected directly to pride. Now, it's also connected to something else we'll see in just a few moments. But the meaning of the word fall has to do with going from a lofty place to a sudden stop at the end. It has to do with having a high and proud look about ourselves. A haughty spirit is often detected from our countenance and also from the words in which we choose to use, or our voice inflection, or sometimes it could come on our countenance or in our eyes. We speak with our expressions, and so those expressions sometimes are driven even by a haughty spirit. The Hebrew word, the Hebrew verb form of this word, means to lift oneself up. So when we talk about a haughty spirit, we're talking about someone who has lifted himself up or herself up. Now, I thought about this as I was building this sermon. I thought about this. What Bible characters had a haughty spirit, and then what kind of history did they leave? What does a haughty spirit really leave? And I begin to think, who loved to be high and lifted up? What Bible characters? And I thought of immediately Isaiah chapter 14. Let me read this to you. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which doth weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, now listen to Lucifer, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. There is a lofty spirit in Lucifer's description of who he wanted to be, what he wanted to do, where he wanted to go. The paragraph concludes in verse 15, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. And we know that that is yet prophetical. He will be brought down, will he not? It will happen. So Lucifer fell out of heaven because of a haughty spirit. I will, I will, I will, I will. And that's what a haughty spirit does. It exalts self. And it sets itself up on a high and lofty place only to fall, only to come crashing down. I thought about this. Genesis chapter 3. Sin was introduced into the human race by a haughty spirit. And that haughty spirit poisoned Eve. Yea, hath God said, the serpent said to Eve. Hezekiah got caught up. He was a great king. I love Hezekiah. I need to preach a message on his character. He was a tremendous king. He's really one of my favorite kings of Israel. But he had a problem. And he had a problem by exalting self. And he loved it when the queen said, the half has not been told me. He loved it when he gave a tour to her and said, look at what I have done. And God dealt with him about his haughty spirit. It was about who he was, what he has accomplished, where he wants to go, what he wants to do. Hezekiah got caught up. Good king. A good king. And then I thought of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, Nebuchadnezzar started out unsaved. And I mean, he went through a real battle with his pride. He was so proud of what he had done. At the end of the 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The Bible says in Daniel 4, verse 30, the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? You think he was full of himself? Absolutely. He had a haughty spirit. But you know what God does? You know what he will do for us and what he does for anyone who has a haughty spirit? He has a way of pruning our pride out. God is so unique. That same chapter, he pruned Nebuchadnezzar. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And God dealt with him immediately. Matter of fact, if we go on reading in the fourth chapter of Daniel, we don't turn there and take the time to do so, but we'll find that God punished him. He dealt with him harshly. And drove him, after bragging about who he was, drove him. Matter of fact, his haughty spirit drove him insane. And he ended up living in a field, eating the grass. His hair grew in to eagle's feathers, matted, unkept, until finally there was a part of his life that he began to recognize his sin, And he ended up praising God in that very same chapter. If you took time to read chapter 4 before you go to bed tonight, you'll find every bit of this in there. And he extolled the God of heaven in the end. Got his mind back. Let me tell you how dangerous I believe a haughty spirit is. See, here's what a haughty spirit does. It so deceives you that you think you're the best. You think that everybody ought to see everything your way. You think everybody ought to bow down to you. You think no one should ever challenge you. Haughty people like to be in control. And you think everybody ought to see everything exactly the way you see it. And that's the way Nebuchadnezzar was. And God dealt with him. The sin of a haughty spirit has the ability to trap the best of believers, whether you're an unsaved heathen king that he's going to use to bring you to salvation, or whether you're a godly king who tore down the groves, who did right, who brought revival to a nation, and yet his pride and haughty spirit cost him at the end of his life. Doesn't matter. You see, a haughty spirit is no respecter of persons. It will come to the rich as well as to the poor, the high as well as the low. David's pride got the best of him one day, and he exercised his haughty spirit over the counsel of a very wise counselor. He told Joab, who was one of his counselors, "I want to number Israel because I want to be able to see the people understand that I've got a motive to purchase ground to build the temple." God was going to take care of that, but David got ahead of God. And he wanted to take a census. He wanted to number. There's nothing wrong in taking a census. That in itself was not simple. It was done often for taxation. It was done for military purposes in case they had to have a military draft. A census would be taken. A census is not sin. It's just that God was not going to use David's logic to give David what he knew he was going to give him anyway. And so David disobeyed God. Even the counselor, even Joab, warned him about it, questioned him in a very kind way. He realized that the king wasn't seeing this thing right. Matter of fact, let me read the account to you, because I think it would even help us. How do you help a haughty person? Well, Joab is a good example of that. He loved his king. He served him. And they didn't end up with the best relationship because of David's sin. And when you really realize how David's sin crushed Joab, their relationship was never the same. Ahithophel, his chief counselor, eventually abandoned him in Absalom's rebellion as well as Joab in the end. How sad all that is, that's a whole other sermon for another day. But let me read a few verses to you from 2 Samuel 24. Verse 2 begins this way, "For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, 'Go from Dan to Beersheba and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people.' And Joab said unto the king, 'Now the Lord thy God add unto the people, how many soever he be, they be, 100-fold, and that the eyes of the Lord the king may see it.'" God's going to take care of this, David. You don't have to number. God, please, I want you to see this, David. He reasoned with his king. "But why doth the Lord, the king, delight in this thing?" Why do you delight in doing this, David? He very politely, gingerly, he wasn't arrogant with it. He was very concerned, out of concern. He caused David to think. But you see, when we're on a mission, in our haughty spirit, we are blind to that. We can't see it. We have rose-colored glasses on because we're on a mission. Verse 4 says, "Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. And Joab gave up the sum of the number." He came back to David. Now he's giving David the sum of the number of people unto the king. "And there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people." One thing I love about David is when God convicted him of his sin, he fell to his knees over it. He was disturbed by it. He was upset at himself. I have sinned. Here's what David said after he had called for the census. I have sinned greatly in that I have done, and now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. Oh, if he would have just listened to a gracious captain who loved him, if he would have just listened. Wise is the leader who surrounds himself with men and women who have brains and can think in ways they can't, and that will listen to them just for my own refreshment. I did some reading on some quips and quotes about pride. I think sometimes when we can smile at it, we can see it better. Sometimes we can see the hard preaching of it and we can see the results of it. But it was Uncle Bud Robinson, that famous Nazarene preacher, said this: pride is the only disease known to man that makes everyone sick except the one who has it. It is out of self-love that all other evil passions spring. Pride is the ground in which all other sins grow. Another quote: none are so empty as those who are full of themselves. A man wrapped up in himself makes a pretty small package. A high and lofty spirit is found in someone who is always knee-deep in conversation. And this is one of my favorites. A flea to an elephant he was riding after crossing a bridge said, "Did you notice how we shook that bridge?" I thought you'd like that one. Another one of my favorites: God pickles the proud and preserves the foolish. Either way, we wind up canned. We have to be careful. A haughty spirit is directly tied to our pride, and our pride stinks. Let me give you a second verse. Turn with me to chapter 18, verse 12. Quickly. Before destruction, here's what the verse says: the heart of man is haughty, and before honor is humility. So what is the second thought? The second thought is a haughty spirit is directly tied to destruction. If we're going to take a gamble and be full of our own self-conceit, then we are headed down the path of destruction. The Hebrew word destruction means fracture. It's really a medical term. And it simply means figuratively to ruin. Specifically, it means an affliction or a bruise that continues to get worse and worse, and it festers. And what happens? Soon it begins to eat into bones and crush them, and you're headed for destruction. You're headed to be torn into pieces. Jehoshaphat compromised. A good man started out right, ended up wrong. Compromised. Many of you may know the name Dr. Howard Hendricks, and I quote him now because he just died last year. Matter of fact, he died a year ago this month. And Dr. Hendricks was professor of biblical hermeneutics and expositional preaching at Dallas Theological Seminary. That's not a seminary that is an independent Baptist seminary, but when you look at how God used Dr. Hendricks in an unusual way, he began early in his ministry to pastor, and they brought him back, and he stayed 50 years, and he taught some of the evangelicals that we hear even on the radio today. And he had a tremendous influence in many, many preachers' lives. Whether they're in our vein of fundamentalism or not really doesn't matter, because I'm getting to some of his memoirs. and what he had to say. Now, I'm quoting from him, and I want you to listen. My whole point is this. A haughty spirit is tied directly to our destruction. If we tolerate it, it will destroy our life. And it doesn't make any difference if we're a layman or a preacher or a missionary or a Christian day school teacher. It doesn't make any difference. Now, I want you to listen to what I found in my research. For years, and I'm quoting Dr. Hendricks. I've read several of his books. I was required to do so when I was in school. For years, I have kept a little black book, and every time I dealt with one of my former students that had to leave the ministry, I would write their names and the reasons why in that book. After I logged over 100 names, I began to look for the common denominator among them and found that their fall into sin and out of the ministry was preceded by a haughty spirit. Now that is one powerful statement. For a man to make, had 50 years of a professorship training preachers in the era in which we live today. Now go on and complete the quote. Some even said, quote, "That will never happen to me," end quote. It's a haughty spirit. No one is exempt from it. Saul lost his crown because of it. I preached Friday night to the guys that's in RU. And I preached from 1 Samuel 15. How Saul lost his crown. Why? He had a haughty spirit. Let me show you the last one quickly. A haughty spirit is directly tied to the scorner. I wish I could even develop this more, but I've only got a minute or two. Let me give it to you. Turn to chapter 21, verse 24. Let me show it to you. This is the third and final verse. We have about 60 seconds left before 8 o'clock. Notice I said 60 seconds before 8. I didn't say I was quitting at 8. Just 60 seconds before 8. Proud and haughty scorner is his name, who dealt in proud wrath. Pride connected, destruction connected. What else is connected? Birds of a feather flock together, arrogant people. They seem to love to be together. They have a common thread sewing them together. They're called scorners. The word scorn or scorner means to make a mock at, to use your mouth literally to mock someone. How often do we see that? A haughty scorner hates correction. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Proverbs 9:8 says. A scorner loveth not one that reproveth him. Proverbs 15:12. A haughty scorner cannot find wisdom. Proverbs 14:6. A scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not. You can't find wisdom when you have a haughty spirit. A haughty scorner causes contention. Cast out the scorner and contention shall go out. Proverbs 22, verse 10. A haughty scorner is an abomination to men, the Bible says in Proverbs 24:9. And a haughty scorner will be consumed. Isaiah chapter 29, verse 20 tells us. These are indictments against someone who would have a haughty spirit, who would get consumed with it. I wonder tonight, as we've examined three negatives, we'll look at three positives beginning next Wednesday night to balance this out. There are three negatives: anger, envy, a haughty spirit connected directly to our pride, connected directly to destruction, and connected directly to the scorner. It just doesn't pay to have a haughty spirit. May the Lord deliver us from it. And that deliverance, of course, starts at salvation. We're able to see it because we're saved. And because we're able to see it, may God give us a desire not to get caught up in it. And if you find yourself becoming haughty, ask God to deliver you from it. It's a horrible sin because it almost gives a piety about someone, and then they twist it and make it look as if they're spiritual because they're haughty. That's even worse yet. A whole nother sermon for another topic. Would you stand with me, please?